This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Xavier University has launched an effort to accelerate the use of artificial intelligence to improve healthcare. The Xavier Center for Artificial Intelligence holds its first major initiative, the AI Summit, later this month. And joining us to discuss the role of artificial intelligence in the health industry are Xavier Health Director, Dr. Marla Phillips, and Vice President for Quality Assurance and Regulatory Affairs with IBM Watson Health, John Daly. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. John and Marla, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Marla, what is the Center for Artificial Intelligence, and why did Xavier start this?
Right. So Xavier University has been involved in artificial intelligence for years. Actually, all three of our colleges are advancing understanding and applications in artificial intelligence. So College of Arts and Sciences in Computer Science, the Williams College of Business in Marketing Informatics, the College of Professional Sciences, which I'm part of, has health economics, clinical outcomes research programs. And the work I've been doing for the past 9 years is directly with the pharmaceutical and medical device industries and the United States Food and Drug Administration, where we bring these constituents together to the campus of Xavier University, neutral ground, and we address some of the most complex challenges that are facing those industries. And so we looked at a way to help these industries identify potential for product failure before the product would reach the market, before the product could harm patients, and to prevent recalls. And artificial intelligence is a way to help advance those industries to become more predictive. And so that's why we started this work.
You know, and whether people realize it or not, there are already everyday uses for artificial intelligence. There's some common examples out there that you frequently point to.
Right. Yeah. So, and a lot of them are fun because you don't really think about it because they're so available to us. And so even just doing an internet search, you type in the letter X and all of a sudden it pops up, oh, you must obviously be searching the Xavier Center for Artificial Intelligence. And all you typed in was X. So it's around us everywhere. Yes.
Absolutely. Another example would be the Netflix algorithms they use to, along the lines of what Marla was saying, try and steer you to movies you would enjoy.
Yeah, then a lot of times it seems like it's all you're having your mind read. In some cases, it's very interesting. So, what are some examples of how healthcare companies are already using AI?
Right, and so John, I'll let you respond to that because you're actually doing work in those areas that are more on the clinical side.
Yes, we have a number of things we're doing, and we call them offerings that we brought out. A good one would be Watson for drug discovery. It's in the market, and it's already being used. It was used by the Barrow Institute. They focus on ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And working with them, we trained Watson regarding proteins related to ALS. And we took Barrow's data, and we took all the publicly available literature, and then Watson rank ordered the 1,500 genes in the human genome and estimated which ones it thought were most related to ALS. That sounds good. 8 of the 10, the Barrow Institute already confirmed, yes, those are important. But there were 5 genes, proteins, that had never before been associated with ALS. And what it did is it cut probably years off the amount of time it would have taken them to find those 5 proteins. And now they've got 5 new areas to research. We have a number of others, but I'll let you follow up with another question if you have one.
Mainly, John, I did want you to back up a little bit and tell us about IBM Watson Health and what that,
That
initiative is about.
So most people are probably familiar with Watson through Jeopardy in 2011 when Watson went on and defeated Ken Jennings and another Jeopardy contestant in the game. So after that, that was internally, that was Watson's coming out party, and that was when IBM knew that this technology could really work out in society.
And Watson is a supercomputer, John? Is that how you would describe it?
Actually, Watson is a number of technologies. We call it cognitive computing. Part of that is machine learning. And what we mean when we say cognitive is a system that understands, reasons, interacts, and learns. So it uses a number of machine learning techniques and artificial intelligence techniques that can run from optical character recognition, so that when Watson reads a medical article, it actually understands it, to voice recognition. So if it's listening to a doctor's notes, it can understand what's said. And then also image recognition. We announced at HIMSS we're attempting to create the breast advisor to help oncologists read through mammograms much more quickly.
So you've already seen a lot of success with Watson Health.
We have, and we are.
Marla, what can AI be used to diagnose things like Alzheimer's, depression, where maybe a doctor or a loved one might miss the signs?
Right. So just to be clear, I'm not specifically working in that area, but as far as what I've seen out there, and specifically even here in Cincinnati through Cincinnati Children's, John Pestian is on our core team. They are working at using artificial intelligence to detect signs and speech patterns that might give you indication of depression. So imagine if we could actually pick up on signs of suicide before they happen. And you know, the experts will tell you the signs are everywhere, but we're just, you know, blind to them because the person's too close to us or something like that. But through artificial intelligence, it can actually detect speech pattern differences that we're not even paying attention to. So there certainly are a lot of applications in the diagnostic area. And then also it's being used in the healthcare industry for clinical trials. So clinical trials are extremely expensive and really add to the whole cost of the drugs and the medical devices that are being released to the market. So if you can identify signs very early in the process, first of all, that are giving you an indication that the clinical trial is not going to be successful, you can stop the clinical trial before it continues too far. And so first of all, obviously that would help financially, but there's also the other aspect that there are patients in these clinical trials, and you want to protect the patients as early as possible as soon as you see signs of failure. So it is being used diagnostically as well as in clinical trials across the board. But what we're doing through the Center for Artificial Intelligence is we're bringing together the professionals who are the ones who are making the decisions to release the product to the market. And there's a certain amount of information that they're looking at, a certain amount of data, but it's certainly not as robust as it could be. And there are sources of data that we just couldn't possibly have the time to ever get the product out the door if we looked at everything. But through artificial intelligence, we can allow these systems to constantly be scanning for information that's relevant and could be correlated to, hey, this could possibly lead to product failure. Don't release this to the market, something that we're not picking up on today as humans.
What's the difference between a company tracking its metrics and using AI to track things? I mean, how do those two things differ?
Right. So interesting question. We actually co-led with FDA a big metrics initiative for the entire global medical device industry. I love data. I love metrics, but they're limited. So typically with metrics, you're looking at something that has already failed. So how did that fail? What caused that to fail? And now I'm going to make a decision from that. With artificial intelligence, you might be looking at information before failure has ever occurred. So one example might be there's a lot of ingredients, if you think of baking a cake, a lot of ingredients that go into a cake. Same with a pharmaceutical medicine. A lot of ingredients come in from all over the world. We've recently come to understand as an industry that sugar, for example, has a season. So that makes sense. But with that season comes different performance of that sugar. Even though it passes all of our acceptance criteria all year long, it performs differently once it's inside the product. So that's a very simple example. But there's information that artificial intelligence could have told us a long time ago, where it could have correlated, wow, we're seeing this performance in the product, and it's linked to the season of sugar. Whoever would have thought of that? So it's identifying signals and correlations way earlier than we have, and in some cases than we ever would have.
So it can actually pick up. Go ahead, John.
I think I can. I was recently at our Almaden Research Center out in California, and this is in the area of food safety, not directly in medical device or pharmaceutical health. But an initiative they're working on is characterizing the biome of foods that come in. Because as Marla said, you also have a biome that's based on where something's grown. So lettuce grown in Florida is different when you look at all the things on it from lettuce grown in California. So you certainly would, along the lines of metrics, right? Obviously, you'd look to see, hey, is E. coli in there? And if it is, let's get this thing, off the truck and out of the food supply. but it also allows you to monitor over time and see shifts for things that you wouldn't have even known to look for. It may not actually at that point give you the answer that something is either right or wrong, but it can raise the flag so the researchers and the chemists, the food chemists, can say, hey, is this something to be concerned of? It can also help counterfeiting tremendously, because maybe these Greek olives aren't Greek. They're something else, and you know that because of the genetic fingerprint of the biome.
So, John, what do you see as the next stage for using AI in healthcare?
Well, I think, as Marla said, and with your question, right now it's really just exploding, and there are many companies and people taking their hand at it because it's starting to be democratized. There are application programming interfaces, which are developing toolkits on the web that anyone with programming knowledge can use. So I think we're going to see, I certainly hope we'll see Watson Health at the forefront, pushing new initiatives and showing what can be done. But I do think in areas like diagnosis and healthcare, things like clinical decision support software, I think we'll see an explosion there because people will start to realize what can be done, and then they will start to do it.
Is it being used for prosthetic devices, for more natural movements, and say, artificial arms, hands, legs? Are they already moving in that direction, John?
I do not know. I'm not involved in that field at all, but I would imagine that is probably, it would be an area ripe for investigation, because it could help you optimize grip and know whether, you know, hey, I'm reaching out quickly and I need to grab hard, or is this a gentle, you know, I'm lifting a book off the table.
Marla, what are your thoughts on this? What do you see as being the next step in using AI in healthcare?
Right. So I think as a patient, I'm excited about the potential. There are a lot of uncured diseases out there. And as John was describing, we might not have found the genes that are responsible for some of the diseases that we're seeing, which could then lead researchers to developing therapies for those diseases. So, I mean, there's so many of us where we all have people we know in our lives who are struggling with some type of a terminal disease that in the near future, that could be curable. So the fact that we're heading down the right path of looking to diagnose some of these diseases and to determine the sources so that we can, create medicines for those. I think the clinical trials is another exciting area. I do see the opportunity for the work we're doing, though, as one that's very exciting because, once you have those medications or once you have those medical devices, there are so many factors that go into making and manufacturing those products and releasing them to the market that all of the variables going into them, again, just are not humanly possible to assess and correlate on a real-time continuous basis as you're releasing these products to the market. Our industry also is heavily under fire from criminal activity. It's a very profitable industry to contaminate or to counterfeit the medications, especially oncology drugs and medical devices. So the heparin case is an example where I think artificial intelligence, if it had been in place, could have detected something that would have prevented this from occurring. So you have in our industry your suppliers. But they have suppliers, and they have suppliers, and so on. With heparin, it was the supplier way down the road, a pig farmer in China. If artificial intelligence had been looking at the economic conditions globally and had seen that there was an economic downturn and that there weren't enough pigs being produced or born, it would have led the companies to think, well, how are we getting the product for heparin since it comes from pig intestines?
Right.
Where's this coming from? There aren't enough pigs for this. But it went undetected. So the fact that we can have, with the global complex supply chains that we have in today's world, to be able to help scan that and protect the patients that we're trying to serve, I think to me is very exciting, again, not only for the work we're doing, but as a patient.
How do you, Marla, address the concern that some people might have about AI replacing people, about replacing the human touch.
Right. So, you know, it is interesting. I think as humans, there's a couple different pathways that we tend to take. One is where we think through this in advance and we put the stop gates in place where, okay, we will let AI collect this information and we will make the final decision. There's other times when we let it go and we don't realize that if we don't put those stop gates in place, tragedy could occur. And unfortunately, human nature is we tend to react after tragedy has occurred. You know, that's we see that all over the place. There's things we could have done, whether it's bridges or dams or whatever it is. We don't do anything, even though we know there's danger, until tragedy occurs. So for those who are working in this field and creating these systems, will they put the stop gaps in place that we know how to put in place, or will they let it go until tragedy occurs and then we have to react?
Yeah, I would echo that and say new technology always creates some unsettlement. A trivial example could be when tractors came out. It certainly displaced a lot of people who used to dig trenches by hand. But I think we all would agree the world is better for having tractors there and farmers are more productive. So to Mahler's point, we need to work hard to make sure the technology is used well and understood. Marla and I and the other industry participants at the conference are working closely with FDA, just as one regulatory body, so that we can help them understand, too. This is, I won't call it good AI or bad AI, but just like any other product or computer program, to try and look at it and say, all right, this looks like it was developed very robustly, or here are the things I need to look for and the questions I need to ask to know how robust this solution is.
John, since AI is now being used in healthcare, is it proof the technology has become trusted?
It has, but it's new, so it's not trusted by everyone. And anything new, you do have to earn the trust. So there will be some stumbles, I'm sure. We're working hard to make sure they don't occur, and that's why we are working so closely with not only with FDA, but I've also been working closely with the Japanese Ministry of Health to help them. They have the same questions. The non-luxury that we have in our industry is we have to get it right. Other companies can have the luxury of getting it wrong, and the only ones who'll get hurt are the shareholders. Everyone, and I think Marla will echo this, she knows everyone at this conference. We know we have to get it right. So we will definitely walk before we run. And another key thing to what you had mentioned, Mark, at least in our offerings, we are consciously, we're keeping the physician or the researcher still at the center. So, for example, identifying the proteins, it still was up to the researchers to verify that. They're still the ones who will go off and develop the drugs. We have a product that's out there called Watson for Oncology. And what it's doing, it's helping to bring oncological expertise to the world. We partnered with Memorial Sloan Kettering, and it helps the physicians and the patients by searching through their EMR and through the data that they've inputted themselves and recommending treatments, and it ranks those treatments. So it helps the physician then, our hope is it helps give them more face time with the patient, the less they have to flip through journals and try and figure out what's going on to keep up, the better we can help with that. Because the data show that to actually keep up today, doctors would have to read 29 hours a day to keep up with all the new professional literature. And I don't think they're going to do that.
Right. And regarding the question about trust, so that's a great question. I think this industry is so new with this technology that they might not completely even understand what all is needed. And so through the Center for Artificial Intelligence at Xavier, we're bringing together an entire ecosystem within this industry to address it more holistically. So we're bringing together companies like Eli Lilly, Johnson & Johnson, IBM, Dell, Abbott, AstraZeneca, along with the FDA, not only in the D.C. headquarters, but through the Cincinnati district here. They're just fantastically engaged. But what the reason we're bringing that ecosystem together is artificial intelligence is a product of garbage in, garbage out. So if we don't provide it with information that's relevant and that is meaningful, then the outcome is not going to be relevant or meaningful. And so it's critical that we look at what are the sources of information we should be assessing and what does it mean. And then to John's point, you have to at some point have humans intervene to say, yes, that is meaningful. So, for example, when I leave campus, I drive up Dana Avenue and I turn left onto 71. And as I'm turning left, my car sensor starts beeping. And it's startling because you think, am I about to hit a bike rider or what's going on? I'm just turning left onto the highway. And it's signaling to me that the guardrail's there. Really not relevant information as I'm trying to make a left-hand turn. I don't think the guardrail is going to jump out and hit me. So there's signals that could occur that say either, yes, go ahead and release that product to the market, or no, you should discard it even though it was okay and now we're wasting dollars and time. So there's a lot of work to be done. I think the trust can be gone if garbage in produces an outcome that everyone says, well, that wasn't right, so artificial intelligence must not be reliable, instead of it is reliant on the information we provide in.
So tell us about the summit that's coming up August 24th and 25th. Dates right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So the summit is kind of the execution arm of our center. So we want to put the work we're doing into action. So we're bringing the global industry to our campus here August 24th and 25th. We will be developing working teams that are led by FDA officials and pharmaceutical and medical device executives. These teams are going to be addressing the challenge of how do we improve the assurance of our product quality before we release it to the market. They're going to be working all year round, and then next August at our summit, they're going to present the output that the industry can then adopt globally, and then we'll take on the next challenge.
So this is going to be an annual summit then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. And so to develop the working teams that will develop the output that can be used globally by the industries.
And where can people get more information on this, Marla?
So at our website at xavierai.com. Okay. We have all the information about the summit and the center.
And we have a link to that at wvxu.org as well. And John and Marla, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Oh, Mark, thank you for having us.
Xavier Health Director Dr. Marla Phillips and Vice President for Quality Assurance and Regulatory Affairs with IBM Watson Health, John Daly. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives of our programs at wvxu.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Dave Shermer was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Of us like to talk about dying, but planning for the inevitable and making sure your loved ones know your wishes can help ease the emotional pain of death. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll hear how to have that difficult but important end-of-life conversation. We'll also talk with horticulture researcher Alan Armitage and get a preview of this year's Cincinnati Zoo Plant Trials Day. That's Cincinnati Edition, Wednesday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.